Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, Park fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week talking about the goings-on in the theme park industry, particularly in the UK, but also looking overseas sometimes. And occasionally, I get an interesting guest who I can come on and have a nice chat with as well. Kev is usually with me. He's still over in Disneyland Paris, but I am joined by Kip Hakes.
Hello!
And we have a guest today, and I'm really grateful to Nick Hudson for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me. Interesting is a strong word, but
You're a very interesting person, Nick. No, don't pull yourself down. If you don't know Nick, where have you been? He is known in the world of theme parks for his musical compositions. He's also known for doing some theme park podcasting, which is on the Season Pass, which is kind of American-based podcast, but you're the UK correspondent, you know, like on the news where we go, let's go to our international correspondent. Nick fills that seat for those guys, and you're just generally a bit of a theme park nerd as well, aren't you?
I'm a theme park fan, yes. I think that's
You changed it to fan there, not nerd. Are you saying you're not a nerd?
No, I'm less interested in the nuts and bolts, quite literally the nuts and bolts. I'm more interested in the theatrical side of the storytelling and theming and illusions and the music and the stuff one appreciates when one gets older, I think. And the food.
We've just been talking about theme park food, actually. Yeah. No, I fully agree. I think we're all in the same boat here. And I always do say with this podcast, although I definitely class myself as a theme park nerd, I will never tell you about nuts and bolts because I don't have a clue. I can't get excited about that stuff, but I can get excited about some lovely fun days at theme parks. So before we go into a bit of recent theme park chat, I thought we should get to know you a little bit, Nick. So would you class yourself as a composer? Is that what your day job you'd say is?
Yeah. Composer, sort of sound designer, show, not writer, but kind of I like to work with the people I'm doing attractions with to guide what the audio can do. Sometimes if you've done Toon Blaster, voice actor, which is
oh, you're the voice of Toon Blaster.
I am, yes. My demos made it beyond the demo stage, and they said to me, "You're doing the voice." So I went, "Oh, okay." And occasionally that, which is good fun. Musical theatre writer, do stuff for cabarets. I do whatever music needs to be done, really. But my main focus is the themed entertainment industry, I call it, because it's everything from restaurants to fireworks shows to rides to lands to whatever.
And everything in between. That's fascinating. Very, very jealous, actually. You get to work in such an exciting industry. How did you kind of work your way into it? Was it right place, right time? Or was it very like laser focused, I need to do that?
It's a very, very right place, right time, doing a podcast, meeting John Wardley thing, that kind of, and meeting various people, and someone emailed someone and who was looking for music, and it just happened to be Subspecies and Molly Crowe at Alton Towers, and that was where I got my UK gig. But I was doing stuff in the Philippines and Malaysia before that for a friend of mine who worked for a kind of live attraction company, and then we did Ghostbusters in Six Flags Mexico and the Philippines and Malaysia as well, and stuff for Sunway Lagoon, and then that led to me being able to do more stuff for the UK, for Merlin and Oakwood and Ice Cream Farm and Dinosaur and lots of random places like that. And Kip Hakes as well. I did some stuff for you as well.
Oh, you hit the big time there.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make you a star, kid.
I was like, I've made it. no, but that is it's amazing, isn't it, how just one conversation with one person can lead to this like catalyst chain of events where you now find yourself doing what you do, and I'm sure sometimes you pinch yourself, you're like, how did I get here?
Pinch myself, slap myself, there are two those very the two extremes are there, yes.
it's valid. So you spoke to John Wardley and he kind of started this off for you?
Well, I was doing stuff for this company called Sudden Impact, which were the ones out in Six Flags, Mexico, and in Malaysia. And then I was interviewing John Wardley for the Season Pass podcast. And I said to John, do you know anyone at Merlin that you could send my stuff to? And he went, yes, send me the stuff. So I did. And then a chap called Pete Cliff got in touch with me. And he was in the entertainment department at Alton Towers at the time. And he was staying with an Imagineer in Orlando at the time, who also knew me and was also telling Pete about me. So he heard from two different people about, and he's probably thinking, is this Nick Hudson? And it's worked out really well because I'm currently doing a project for him at the moment. So that was 12 years ago. So it's kind of, it's that one little kind of introduction, and it can. And people always ask me, how do you get into it? I said, there's no real way. I was just very, very fortunate that I was able to open those connections. Mm-hmm. And yeah, 53 projects on, it's going rather well.
Yeah. I mean, people always say, oh, you know, I've had people on this podcast, Neil Dwyer, he's VP of operations at Six Flags Qiddiya, say, I was just lucky I was in the right place at the right time. And I always stop them and I say, no, you weren't lucky. Like, you did also make that opportunity for yourself. You had the courage to say to John, do you know anyone that you can pass my stuff to? You didn't just do the interview and say, all right, see you later, John, thanks very much. You know,
yeah,
in a way, you have to make these opportunities for yourself and you have to ask these questions.
And I like to think that I also have the skill to do it as well. It's well, all very well
putting yourself out there. Just plonking around on a keyboard.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it's nice that I get to combine what I love with what I can do. And I think that's quite a rare... Because a lot of people in the theme park design industry sadly look at it as a 9-to-5 gig, and the minute they're kind of a project, there's very little love that kind of is presented for some projects in this country. And I like to think I offer more than just, yeah, I'll do a piece of music and they can have it in sort of a week's time and that's it. I like to know, what's the pre-show holding state going to be and how's it going to work with the queue? And I like to get into all the technical nitty gritty bit because it makes the product better. And something like Crop Drop, for example, when it operated properly, it was a lovely through show that had the door opening audio and it had the bit as you were going in and then it had the announcement for the ride. And then when the ride ended, it had the post announcement, which bled into the, you know, it all kind of, we do work hard on these sorts of things.
I like how you slipped in there when it operated properly.
Well, yeah.
It's true.
It's a shame that that ride is, 3 years old and it's having issues already. And it's just, you know, out of my control. But it would be nice if things had a bit more engineering in this country. But, you know. I can't help that.
No, you can't. And none of us can. All we can do is keep, I don't want to use the word moaning about it, but we do moan about it because I think it's valid criticism when we know things like this, especially when you've worked on something and you're like, I know how this is supposed to work. And I, you know, every day a ride's going to have some sort of technical issues and you can never, you know, foresee everything. But when it's consistently not getting fixed, I think,
I've heard it spinning again now, which is amazing.
I've heard that.
Oh, that's good. That's positive because I've never been on it spinning. I've never had the opportunity to go on it spinning. So that is positive. That is good. Yeah.
I'll just sit here on my office chair and play the music and just lift it up and down.
You could sell it as an experience. Just exactly. If you want the Croc Drop experience, go around Nick's house. He's got an office chair and he's got the music.
My girlfriend always says, we could have you training at home. You just, I microwave you a lasagna and just wheel you around the house. And then you can... Like a lockdown project.
Well, there we go. Let's talk about a lockdown project because this is also something which, you know, I found very amusing during lockdown when you did, was it Theme Park Fan the Musical?
It was, yes.
I was in it.
Thank you for triggering that memory.
Well, you know what? You made your bed, Nick. You're now going to lie in it. Look, lockdown was a traumatic time for a lot of us, not just because theme parks were shut, but just because we didn't know what on earth was going on with the world and when we were going to get out of it. I think that's the overarching memory for me is we can look back on it now and go, oh, it was a lovely time. It was sunny and we just all like minced around all day. But we didn't know when it was going to end.
I feel attacked.
But so, you know, as theme park fans, we had a lot of time on our hands. I didn't. I had a child during that time, so I was very busy.
More for you.
I know, it was a terrible decision.
Sorry.
But Nick, clearly, you know, you had some time and you thought, I'm going to write a musical about being a theme park enthusiast.
Yes.
And it's a full musical. It wasn't like just one or two songs. No, it's like a full-length production.
Well, that's my real background is musical theatre writing and stuff. So I've always wanted to kind of do a musical set in the theme park, especially with all the characters we have, because it's such a colourful variety of people. Mm. And the opportunity just presented itself. It went through various different kind of guises. And eventually the idea came to just have everyone in it. And because everyone was around, you know, John Wardley, Neil Patrick Harris, and less important people. It was it was a blessing because I could say to anyone, can you just record this line, sing a bit of this song, and I and the people I was working with will make it work. And yeah, it wasn't perfect, but it raised nearly £2,000 for charity, which I'm very happy with.
Amazing.
And it brought everyone together at a time when we wouldn't be in this weird kind of meta. We don't do opening weekend at Blackpool in February anymore, but it was the night we should have been all in Spoons. We were at home listening to a song about
being in Spoons.
Us being in Spoons. and it was the kind of the music's fun. The story's fun. I mean, it's all a bit, it's a musical comedy in its traditional form, but it was, for me, it was the excitement of everyone coming together, and it was the big topic that night. You know, everyone was hopefully enjoying it. Some people kind of went, oh, this is ridiculous, but it's not, who cares? You know,
it was kind of meant to be a bit ridiculous, though, wasn't it? It wasn't like, this is my serious operatic piece of work.
It's not my magnus opus.
No.
But it was just a bit of a laugh, really, and that was what I cherished most. Was every Saturday we'd all sit with the cast and have a read through and things, and we'd work on it together, and got down to the final wire. And at 7:30 on that day, we, you know, 2,000 people sat down as you would in a theatre and kind of watched it, listened to it. I don't know, and yeah, it's a real time capsule, I think, of that time and what it could have and what it could achieve. And the fact I was on Heart FM talking about it. We're on Breakfast News in Manchester and the Blackpool Gazette and the Wetherspoons magazine covered it. And that's what that's what I wasn't expecting. And that really made it, like, oh, this is actually, you know, something that sort of worked, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's still on YouTube today, so if you haven't watched it, you can go in and relive that time. And I really recommend that you do if you are a theme park enthusiast and you haven't done that already. Wasn't John Burton in it as well?
John Burton was in it. John Wardley was in it. Kip was in it. Like
all the big hitters.
Yeah. All Neil Patrick Harris was in it, and why wouldn't he be? Because if anyone's going to be in a theme park musical having a cameo, it'd be him.
Is he a theme park nerd?
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's
He's a huge enthusiast. He has a Ferris wheel in his house because his house has a story.
Wow.
It's like a traveling circus, you know, and he was the original voice for California Screaming for the launch at Disney. And so he's a big, he's done World of Color. And so, yeah, I think he's more of a Disney enthusiast than a theme park enthusiast. But, you know, good friend of mine, I was in Dubai last summer and I messaged him about to go on the Smurfs ride. And I said, are you in this? And he messaged back and said, I don't know, tell me.
Probably. Yeah. That's amazing. I love that. I love that you brought together the world of theme park content creating kind of nerdy people and Neil Patrick Harris all under the same banner. And John Morgan and John Burton.
and Disney composer Alan Menken donated some money towards it and gave a lovely supportive message to the to everyone involved. And so it's kind of, again, going back to the podcast, using all these links I've made to kind of make people happy. I guess that's, you know, that's what I like to do.
No, absolutely.
Not everyone was happy, and some people moaned about it, but that's their problem.
Oh, well, you know,
but, yeah, it's just the thing. That is like the theme. Well, it's the world, isn't it? But it is the sort of theme park content creator world.
Nothing. It's also what the message of the musical was, but let's ignore that.
The irony.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't make everyone happy. And I think I do think that a lot of people just didn't really get it. But I think if you love musical theatre and you love theme parks, it was just absolutely perfect. It made me chuckle and it made me so happy. And the added bonus that I have a tiny line or two in it as well. It always catches me by surprise, like, because I do listen to it quite a bit. It's on my, you know, I fire it up on Spotify, and yeah, it makes me happy. And it is sort of, that is probably one of the nicest things about COVID that happened, you know. Obviously lots of people died, so that wasn't very good, but that was a bit of a beacon in a horrible time.
Yeah. And it was something that only could have happened during lockdown. It could have been
absolutely
done now.
Although I would love to see a full stage production of it, I'm not going to lie.
Wouldn't we all? but I don't see it happening. I mean, I thought the best place to do it would be the theatre at Blackpool Pleasure Beach.
But
fun enough, they didn't seem very interested.
Well, even that's a shame.
Even though Amanda has heard it, which is lovely.
Why don't we just go and do it in the Velvet Coaster?
I hand it over to you. Good luck.
I agree. I mean, what blew my mind with that project for you is just how you managed to execute that during COVID. At the time, I said I was having a child, but at the very start of COVID, I put together a piece for the BBC radio station I was working for at the time. And it was one of these like lockdown choirs where people from all over like sent me their audio tracks, which then got mixed together into one big choir piece. And we had Scouting for Girls doing it with us. But I didn't do that mix. Don't get me wrong. I just collated the project. But putting all of these random bits of audio tracks together, which were being sent in from all over, and then making it sound, you know, cohesive and like it made sense during lockdown is a massive undertaking. Yeah. So the fact that you managed to pull that one off, I think, is quite incredible.
And do Crot Drop at the same time. Yeah, that was so lockdown was more work than I'm used to usually, which was fun. But yeah, it's a testament to what technology can do and how far we've come with collaborating and things. And the way you did it was you just sent people a guide vocal and they just sing along with it.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't perfect, I could manipulate it my end and shove it all together. And it was really exciting hearing other people do it. Whether they could act or sing didn't really matter, because it was the whole, you know, everyone can sort of do it. And that's what it was about. It was about giving it a go, coming together and enjoying the process. And I like to think we achieved that.
I think you did. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Other than Theme Park Fan the Musical, what would you say has been one of your defining career moments so far? What are you most proud of? What have you enjoyed working on the most?
Bouncezilla. No, I...
Oh my god, I forgot you did that. That was so amazing. That is also, I've got an MP3 file of that. And that, I love that so much. I'd completely forgotten it was Bouncezilla.
I actually run to Bouncezilla now because it's a good running track. But I go between I'm proud of everything and I'm not really a fan of anything I've done, because you lose all emotional connection to it. But I think for me, Toon Blaster is my main... My partner calls it Nick Land, because you've got Rainforest and you've got Toon Blaster and you've got Crop Drop all in one kind of...
And they're all yours.
Yeah, all in one area. But Toon Blaster, I love Dark Rides, and I especially loved Fifth Dimension and Terra Toon, and less so Toon Blaster in its previous state. And just to be able to come in and do anything I could to help the ride was an absolute dream come true. So I think Toon Blaster, very proud of Subspecies, the End Games as well, because I think that was something that very new for Towers. but I'm proud of everything because every job is a gift, and I'm very lucky to be offered them, and I'm very lucky to get to do them. And it's like handing over your children to someone else. It's like, yeah. I've done it now. You go off into the world and have live. But yeah, I'm whatever I mean by that, I'm sure you'll understand. But it's Toon Blaster, Crot Drop are the kind of two. I'm very, very proud of those.
Yeah. No, makes perfect sense. And is there a call that you would love to receive one day that would go, oh my God, this tops everything? If someone said, can you come and do something for us? Who would that call be from?
And the obvious answer is Disney, but in a way I'm not, because I love Disney so much, I don't really want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
I'd have loved to have done some stuff for Dark Universe at Epic.
Don't stop.
And I came quite close to that, but that didn't happen.
Oh, really?
I would have loved to. When the call came to do the fireworks show for Oakwood, that was a big kind of career goal, bucket list tick moment for me. And then the fact I got to do two of them was a joy. And so I was very, very proud of that. But I'm happy with everything, really. And yeah, it's doing a fun job at the moment, which will be nice to announce soon. Doing another fun job at the moment for someone else, which is a bit further afield. But it's nice that technology lets us communicate and work on a broader field. And I dread to think how Graham Smart did the original Terror Tomb in like 1992. Like, how do you get the music to someone? It must have been such a long-winded process, and we're so lucky now. Just say, yeah, I've WhatsApped it to you, check it out. Here's my feedback. Okay, how's this? Fine. It's be very the stress. I mean, it's stressful now, but the stress back then would have been through the roof. So bravo to the OG people doing it.
I've sent it over on 20 cassettes and just play them back to back.
Reel to reel.
Yeah, and don't hit record at the same time as play, because it's gone. It's destroyed. Okay, so you mentioned Oakwood. I'm going to pick you up on that one because, we've done an episode on Oakwood. It was my local park growing up. Obviously, you've done some work with them. What was your feeling when the announcement came that Oakwood was going to be no more?
It's difficult because I remember them saying to me years ago, you'd never build a park here nowadays because it's just the location is so difficult. And I applaud them doing things like Oakwood After Dark because that truly was a unique thing for the UK park scene. Just to have a park open beyond 5 o'clock is a miracle.
Four in some cases.
Yeah, or 3:45 if you're Madame Tussauds in London. But I think Megaphobia was good. Yes, the park needed a lot of care and attention, and I think they were up for it, but it just didn't grab the crowds because it was so weather-based as well. A lot of the people on holiday would rather go to the beach if it was sunny, or if it were raining, they'd just stay at home. So it was a kind of lose-lose situation. I think it'd be interesting to see whatever the future is with this thing that's appeared. But
there's a guy who claims he's local and he's financed it, or it makes sense, and he's offered a proposal to buy it. But as of yet, there's been no word on whether Hasbro are even entertaining the idea.
Which would be surprising. It'd be lovely, I think. There's obviously, hopefully, a market for it. I just think I'd be interested to see if Blue Planet next door?
Bluestone.
Blue Planet is a documentary with David Attenborough. It'd be very interesting if Blue Planet bought it. It'd be more interesting if Bluestone were to buy it, or at least get the rides and
annex a bit of it.
Yeah. So who knows? But I was thrilled to get to go to the park and leave my stamp on the park for a while, but especially the fireworks shows. I'll never be able to take that memory away from me, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a park that is in my heart a lot, and I was sad to see it sort of go the way it went in recent years. I hope it gets saved just so that I can ride Megaphobia again. But I'm also a realist, and you know, when it closed, I did think, "Oh, that's it. That coaster is gone now." So if it comes back, it will be a lovely surprise. But I'm kind of not pinning any hopes on it. We'll watch and see. It has been an exciting month or so, I think, in the theme park world, and often the theme park news all comes, yeah, and the excitement is just before the start of, you know, February and opening.
This has been the most momentous year for...
It's crazy.
It's definitely Universal's year, I will say.
Well,
but
yes.
It's just, who'd have thought 18 months ago or whatever that we'd be entertaining anything happening in the UK?
It's
Abu Dhabi, or, you know,
the announcements are coming through so thick and fast, which is really exciting for us as theme park fans. It's almost too much to keep up with. I think, you know, I'd love to chat. We've done episodes on a lot of this stuff, but whilst you're here, let's talk about them. So firstly, okay, we talked about it being Universal's year. Let's talk about Epic Universe, which has just officially reopened. It's been in previews, you know, for what seems like months now.
Oh, it seems, this is silly. It seemed like it opened about a month ago. I mean, yeah. I don't get where this... It's like, oh yeah, a fireworks show.
And now it's actually open.
Warren Davis has appeared. Okay, good.
Yeah, but that is the official opening of anything.
Yeah.
It is a park that I've been to and I loved it. Do you have any plan? You've mentioned Dark Universe and maybe getting close to working on that. Have you got plans to kind of head over there yourself?
I've 3 days booked in September.
Oh, you're gonna love it.
Nice.
I'm giving it a bit of breathing room to sort their Ministry of Magic out, and then my girlfriend Hannah and I are going in September. Got 2 days definitely booked, 1 day with Express and a third day possibly if we need it. So hopefully we'll get everything done.
Oh yeah, you'll get everything done, and I would say you know, take 3 days to just go and soak up that park. If you're someone who loves details and atmosphere and things like that, it's got that in abundance. And if you, on your third day, if you ride nothing and you just go and, you know, walk around it, it's a day well spent. I mean, it really is incredible what they've done with that park. And I went with the expectation that I have been sold a lie by my influencers who have been paid to be there. And I, you know, I went in with very open eyes and I genuinely loved every hour that I spent in that park. In many ways, it doesn't feel like a theme park. It feels like you've been invited into some sort of gardens. It's so beautiful.
I remember that was always there. You know, we're putting the park back into theme park. And
they've absolutely done that,
I hope more shade appears, because I hear that's one of the issues. But trees take a while to grow, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess you could ship in.
Look at Jumanji. B&Q Garden Centre and theme parks.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, yeah, people talk about the shade a lot. And when I went there, it was very hot, don't get me wrong, and very sunny, but not like as hot as it gets. I didn't find an issue with it particularly, but I am an absolute lizard. If I was there as sun, I am in it basking.
Give it to me.
Yeah, I am very much so. And all of that stuff will mature. And, you know, there's plenty of like air-conditioned restaurants you can go and sit in. You get the whole of the Ministry of Magic, if you can get in there, one massive air-conditioned, cool, dark space. It's amazing. What it did for me was give me absolute reassurance that Universal coming to the UK is going to be a game changer, which of course was the other big news that we've had recently. And it's been rumored for so long, but when announcement came,
it doesn't seem real.
No,
it does feel like someone's going to go, ha-ha, sorry, we don't have the money. Oh, no, we can't do it. It does genuinely feel
found
like
some jumping spiders.
Yeah.
All
I just
worry so much that I've been sort of, you know, well, I guess we've all been theme park fans for ages. We get these sort of whispers of projects and things, and then there was that one in Kent that never happened, and there was like another one in Raynham in Essex like years and years ago, and you just sort of
even
hear these...
there was even a Universal in the 90s that was meant to have been done and didn't.
I don't think I'm going to feel fully secure that it's happening until I'm actually standing there going,
you're
wow,
this
is
on
amazing.
That
yeah, we do get very excited about these things, and sometimes I can't fully believe it until it's actually happening. There's spades in the ground. There's vertical construction. I think then that's when I'm happy.
I know they're skipping the local government, which is where all the problems can
that's
be, and
it,
it's
yeah.
going straight up
right,
to
okay.
To Westminster, up to Westminster. It's going to Westminster, which is great because it proves that I think it their government would look very stupid. If
I mean,
they were
hello,
to,
yeah, hello.
If they were to say, actually, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah, I think the fact that Keir Starmer has pulled some cords on a little curtain that opens on a piece of artwork gives me all the reassurance I need
he's not
going to allow this to fall by the wayside. I am generally a pessimistic, skeptic person. I am 100% convinced this is happening. This will open. Whether it'll open in 2031. I think
true.
That remains to be seen because hello HS2, but I think it will happen. And as soon as Universal get their meaty paws on that bit of land, I think we'll start to see stuff happening. We've done some episodes with Lawrence, who lives very locally, University Bedford, and he talks about this in a lot more detail. There's a lot of boring stuff that needs to happen first, slip roads and, you know, big sort of engineering construction projects before we see anything remotely exciting compared, you know, in the theme park world. But listen, you don't need to convince me it's happening. It's happening. I will die on that stone. It is happening.
I'm a bit, I know we can't take the concept art for certain, but Universal tend to be pretty good at delivering what concept art presents. But I can't help but feel a tiny bit deflated with the choice of IPs, especially when it comes to, it's always hard to predict what's going to be massive in 6 years time. I mean, no one saw the popularity of Wicked, for example, unless you've seen the Broadway show that's been running for 25 years, but it's it's Minions, really?
Yeah.
People love Minions. I love Minions.
The thing is with Minions, I think, is it's kind of proved itself as an IP because the first Despicable Me came out, we were talking about this, it must be about 15 years ago.
God.
Is it that long?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that long, but no, it genuinely has been a ridiculous
amount
of time.
Sure.
And I think the Minions are now kind of evergreen characters who, even when the films, you know, fall out of favor or aren't as popular to watch, Minions will just be like this character that exists, I think, now in their own right.
Like,
they'll kind
like
of
Mickey
surpass...
Mouse in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they don't age, you know, it's not actors. They don't age. They don't do horrible things and get cancelled. They're just funny animated things, aren't they? Yeah. So, you know, it's not like the world of David Walliams at Alton Towers, is it? You know, who says something bad about someone on Britain's Got Talent and then instantly hated. And, you know, it's a sort of universal thing, literally. So, I think I like the Minions idea. There's not going to be a Harry Potter thing, is there?
Not as far as we know.
Yes.
I think they're keeping something secret from us because just to reveal everything. But Harry Potter, I associate that so much with Universal Orlando that it would be weird to kind of go to the Bedford one. And also, if the Lord of the Rings rumor is true, they got to pay credit to it, because without that, J.K. Rowling would have nothing to steal when it comes to creating Harry Potter. if they were to put a Lord of the Rings land in, it would get the Americans over here, and it would keep us going to the Orlando park.
Yeah,
so
which
I think
makes sense.
Because they said, we don't want to clone anything from Orlando. Well, they got three of the best rides you could do for the Wizarding World. They're not going to... I mean, I'm not a huge Harry Potter expert, so I don't know what else they could do, but it seems they were, if they were to go big with Lord of the Rings, that would be a massive pull for the whole world to come to this park.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something we talked about on the episode with Lawrence, and actually how that makes perfect sense. You don't want to destroy that UK holiday maker who purely books Florida really to go and visit the Wizarding World and do all the Harry Potter attractions. Let them keep spending their money to do that, and then, like you say, vice versa, get the Americans to come over here and do Lord of the Rings. It certainly makes a lot of sense. You're not the first person to say that you're slightly disappointed, and I'm not going down this negative enthusiast road with you. I am fully excited and invested in Universal UK. And one of the things that we have seen a lot on the concept artwork is a lot of show buildings, which I'm taking as a real positive. And whilst it might mean we don't have a lot of roller coasters, I think we have to bear in mind we live in the UK. And if this is a 365 park, a load of roller coasters is never going to end well.
Do you think it'll be a 365 park?
I think it will.
Or 364 park.
Yeah, just on Christmas Day. I think they'd be mad not to do it, because we've all sat here in December and gone, there's nothing open. Yeah. And if you've got a lot of world-class indoor attractions, then why would you not open those all year round? I think if Universal sat there in Bedford in January with the gates locked, I think it would be a massive missed opportunity. But just my thoughts.
I completely agree. And, you know, we need more dark rides in the UK.
Yeah.
And having sort of like these big global IPs and sort of movie scale productions in a dark ride would just be insane. So yeah, I'd say the more dark rides the better, really.
We also
want roller coasters.
We also need more entertainment districts open that aren't attached to a motorway in this country. And you know, we've had such lovely weather here lately, and you know, I kind of move myself 6 years in the future. So it will be nice to just to hop over to City Walk at 6 p.m. on this glorious evening to a theme park that's open and have dinner and get on a roller coaster, because there's a real market there, I think, for the kind
Absolutely.
Of evening crowd. And that's something that the UK parks at the moment just don't seem to get. No. Leaving, I had a lovely day at Thorpe Park the other weekend, but 6 o'clock, leave, sun's out, nowhere to eat food unless you're a hotel guest. And they're missing a trick. And I don't know whether it's a cultural 9-to-5 attitude that we have, which I hope can be broken, or if it's an operational thing from Merlin or whoever. But it's a shame. And I think that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, whether they can cause a cultural shift and kind of, yes, you can get on the roller coaster at 10 o'clock in the evening.
I think they can, and I think the point you make about City Walk is a really valid one. The amount of times, you know, the theme parks here at the moment are open such short hours anyway. The last thing you want to do is spend an hour sitting down eating during that theme park opening time, because you're already pushed. But it's madness to me that you don't have this then extension of your theme park day by being able to go, right, we've finished, now let's all go out together to eat somewhere as a family, which is still part of this complex.
I was at Europa Park a couple of weeks ago, and park shut at 8:30 in the evening, and by 9 o'clock we were at Hotel Colosseo having a lovely Italian meal, and we were there till 10:30 at night, and things were still buzzing. It's just, you kind of get that at the Enchanted Lodge, I think, with the Crooked Spoon. It's got a nice, that's a nice venue, but it just doesn't seem as good as it could be. And I hope that City Walk will do that. I hope we get stupid things like Cowfish and the Toothsome Chocolate Factory. And
incredible places.
Not just Wetherspoons, Prezzo and Greggs. I think that would be it.
If there is a Greggs on Universal City Walk in the UK, I'm going to lose my mind.
DR eggs.
That's it. The project is ruined if I see that little golden blue logo as I'm walking in.
Dawn will be thrilled.
I'm sure he will. Yeah. I'll be devastated. I think the future is bright. Obviously, we are a long way off. I think the time's going to rattle by quickly. But I think this is an exciting time to be a fan of theme parks in the UK.
You're going to be seeing an awful lot of that field.
We are. Well, I already am. I think I'm the only person who's not been there.
I mean, the day after it was announced, I was sick of that concept art because it just was appearing everywhere. It's like the biggest
tease.
Have
you been to the field, Nick?
I haven't, no.
I've not been to it. I have driven past it 4 times, but not actually seen it. Although it does blow my mind when I'm on this road to Bedford and I look over at this field. I'm like, there's going to be a Universal there.
And
really?
this is the thing, it's such a good... I'm an hour and a half away. Yeah. You're probably 2.5 hours away, I would think.
Yeah, not even that. Yeah, probably not that dissimilar to you, actually. So it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be probably the most accessible theme park we've got in the UK in terms of being able to get to it with trains, roads being right next by, train system that actually works. Luton Airport's going to be up the road. It's going to,
Hopefully the rail system will have improved by then because I wonder if Universal are prepared for our railway style, which is strikes and delays and all we're stopped running at 8 o'clock on a Sunday and things like that. And just trying to put my head in this space and I still can't get round the fact that it's happening. But what's interesting is not the knee-jerk reaction, because I think this has been known about for far longer than we have known about it, but it's good that it's going to force the other parks to up their game, and it's starting to happen already.
I mean, you've talked about Chessington a lot. Chessington seems to be where Merlin are putting their money. It seems that they're gearing up that to be the big competitor to Universal in the UK. Maybe Croc Drop will start running as it should at the music time. There's certainly a lot of interesting investment that's going into that park.
Yeah,
which is lovely. It was my family park growing up, and I'm not a huge expert on Minecraft or Paw Patrol, but I think they seem to think IPs is the way forward. Whatever you think of that, it's a business choice and means more merch they can sell and things like that. So it's exciting to see what they do with the Intamin 4D coaster, whatever it is we're getting.
Just do quickly want to touch on another big news story that came out, which was over in Abu Dhabi, the opening of a Disney park. Now, I'm not a Disney girl. I'm a theme park fan, but I'm not a Disney obsessive in any way. I think, Nick, you're quite into Disney parks, aren't you?
Yeah. I've been to Anaheim, Florida, and Paris. So I haven't done the Asian parks, but I'd like to. But I have been to Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And whatever the political view on it, we can put that aside and things. But this is going to be a very interesting Disney park, an indoor Disney park, which is going to be the most weird thing, because I'd love a fireworks show, unless they're going to do an indoor fireworks show.
Maybe a drone show inside.
Who knows with this part of the world? But it's kind of, it'll be that it's an easier flight than Orlando, which is interesting. It'll be, I think, the best Disney park in the world, because they have, it's that Disney Sea Oriental Land Company style of doing things where Disney aren't investing into it. So they can say to Miral, who is funding the park, they will have a nice chunk of change to play with. And I think when you give Imagineers a good chunk of change to play with, they can create incredible things. Just look at the SeaWorld out there. Mm. Look, I loved Warner Brothers, the park out. The main reason I went on this trip was to do the Scooby-Doo dark ride. And then everything else just kind of came around that. But they do things, and they do things well, and very much looking forward to it. But it's a very vague bit of concept art. It's like someone's just gone with a paintbrush. That's a ride. That's a ride.
Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of came out of nowhere. Because
I don't think they know yet what they're going to do.
It's almost like they signed the deal and went, right, we've signed it, announce it. And so, okay, we don't have any deal now, just announce it.
And I think, again, it's because of Universal Great Britain.
Mm.
Because they know that the Brits go to that part of the world a lot. And they think, right, what can we do to get them to come to this part of the world for Disney, a very cost-effective way of doing it, because it's just free money for them. They don't have to do anything. They just make money off it. And the Indian market is obviously huge. There's 1 billion people or something, and it's 5 minutes away from Abu Dhabi airport. So it's a kind of, it's like our version of, it's the Bedford thing going to Abu Dhabi, but very, very looking. And it did come out of nowhere. I think it was a knee-jerk reaction to,
quick. We need a Disney park somewhere. Where? Here.
Party!
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting for me. I'm moving to Saudi Arabia in the next literally few weeks. Wow. So it's going to be, I don't think it'll be open whilst I'm there. I'm only going for 3.5 years. I don't, you know, Disney, and they throw money at it. I'm sure they might throw it up very quickly, but I don't think it will. But I can say with some certainty, it is a very exciting part of the world to be in the themed attraction space. They are putting an awful lot into these kind of attractions, not just in Abu Dhabi, but in Saudi, in Dubai. You know, the amount of conversations that I've had with people who are working in this industry, who are themselves having conversations daily about new projects which are getting off the ground in this part of the world. And whether you choose to visit or not is a personal decision, and you know, you have to, you know, make your own decision if you've got a moral objection to going to the Middle East. I mean, I also think, you know, do some research and actually find out what it's like in the Middle East now, because
I will say they were very welcoming, very friendly, extremely polite. And my Hannah, my partner, felt the safest she's ever felt walking around there, because we stayed at the Atlantis Palm, and we just went to their water park, left our phones in cubby holes for 7 hours, and came back they were still touched.
Yeah.
And you know why they won't get touched, but it's kind of, you feel very safe there. I understand some people don't, but I think to say, oh, I can never go there is not true, because I've had LGBTQ friends who have been, and they've loved it and felt very safe. So I think if anyone can change the attitude, it's Disney.
Yeah.
You know, put more of a Western influence. I think maybe that's what they're going for.
I think so. And I think, you know, these countries are very aware that tourism has got to be a driver for them in the coming years. You know, their resource is a natural resource, which at some point will run out. And this is why they have diversified so much into this space. And they know that with that, with tourism comes an expectation that you cannot be a super conservative nation anymore. And if they wanted to stay that way, they wouldn't be doing these projects. There is an appetite to evolve and to change and to develop. And even in Saudi, which is still a completely dry, alcohol-free country, I think with the development of Qiddiya, which is being built as an entertainment city, its whole purpose is to go there for entertainment. I think we will see in the next few years in the resorts there, even that changing.
I also think it comes down to where you go. So if you were to start doing something to your partner in a mosque, that scene is very disrespectful. But if you're kind of holding your hand, perhaps walking through Motion Gate, that's fine, because it's a very Western, westernized part of the country. So, but in a way, it was kind of nice not seeing couples draped over each other and drinking dirt everywhere and things.
It's not a straight v gay thing. You know, it's just PDAs are not something that is done there. It's just not in their culture to be all over each other. And yeah, like you say, I'm not an overly emotional PDA kind of person, so it's not something that I'm gonna get upset about. But you know, everyone's got their own level, and that's absolutely fine. And if you say that's not for me, then that is absolutely, you know, your prerogative, and you should stand by that with your own convictions.
And what's your view on, is it Falcon's Flight, this ridiculous Planet Coaster creation that's coming to life before our eyes?
And that's something I was super skeptical about. But having spoken to Neil at the park, having seen, you know, Intamin saying, there we go, the track's complete, I have faith in the Intamin engineers. I have faith in the amount of money that they will throw at this to get that coaster running and keep it running. Do not underestimate the bottomless pit of money that is available to make sure that this runs. This is not being built in a Merlin park. This
no, that's true. it is literally
built in a Six Flags park, which is even weirder.
Well, it is, but a Six Flags park with very, very, very deep pockets, and they do not want their flagship coaster to be sat there gathering literal dust.
I'm also excited to see what they have planned for Ferrari World. That was a park I wasn't even expecting to go to on my trip, because I planned Warner Brothers, but I didn't know Ferrari was 5 minutes away, and there was a certain ride there that I was very keen to get on, which wasn't Formula Rossa. It was Mission Ferrari, because Formula Rossa was closed. But now they're planning something even bigger and better than what's going into Six Flags.
This is the thing. It's all one-upmanship. What? And this will carry on, and it's about who's got the biggest and who's got the best, and which makes it an exciting place to see, you know, to win a place to be as a theme park fan, and we'll see how it pans out. And you know, I've got no expectations. That Neil has told me this park will open in 2025. Let's see if that happens. And you know, Disney are giving us no indication of when they're planning to open, but they've said it's going to happen. And I think the one thing that I think gets lost a lot in these conversations about the Middle Eastern parks when we are discussing it is that these parks are not being built for us. You know, they want tourists to visit, yes, of course, but let's not forget there are thousands of children who live in this part of the world who deserve to be able to go to a Disney park. And they don't have that opportunity at the moment.
They've never had the opportunity. They've never had parks like this. And you know, it kind of makes me annoyed that the American attitude was, I'm not going there. I can't go there.
I can't
go. Why not? Yeah. I go to your country. I've been to Dubai.
Yeah.
Explore the world. You know, that's what the great thing about being a true fan of theme parks is, it does get you to see the world. And yes, some people say it's not culture. Of course it is. Mm. You're in living, breathing art installations. Mm. With mechanics and science and food and drink and entertainment and theater all thrown into one bizarre thing that can either be dreadful or can be the most amazing tear-inducing thing that you've ever experienced. And that's why I love it, because it is pure theatrical magic if it's done right.
Yeah.
Even if it's done wrong, it's funny. But it's so exciting to see new parts popping up everywhere. It's like someone's just set off a chain reaction. Yes, we're in the middle of it, which is bizarre, but it's just amazing to see where we're going to be in 10 years' time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Saudi Arabia's never had a theme park. This is going to be their first experience. I said this to Neil. Imagine never having seen a theme park before, other than on TV. And then the first thing you see is Six Flags Qiddiya, and you've got a 600-foot coaster going down the side of a cliff. I mean, it's going to blow my mind. And I have seen more than my fair share of roller coasters. So, yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited for the people whose countries these are as well, that they get to have some of the joy that we have of theme parks.
And yeah, absolutely.
Without having to jump on a plane and fly to Europe or fly to America. Yeah. I think, you know, that it's an exciting time for them. And if we get to experience it as well, then great. if it's something that we choose to go and do. Nick, it's been fascinating having you on today. I'm not going to hold you back too long, because I know that you've got a million projects you're working on, and there's probably keyboards that need tinkling with. But before you go, I have got one question to ask you.
Yeah.
Just gotta ride it.
This is Just Gotta Ride It. It's the part of the podcast where we ask our guests if there was only one roller coaster in the world they could save. Everything else is getting destroyed. You'll never ride them again. Which is the one that you would save, and why would you save it?
I would save Hagrid's Magical Motorbike Experience Adventure Express, whatever it's called.
I think that was correct, actually.
Yeah, that was the shortened name. No, let's call it Hagrid's, because everyone knows what I'm talking about. I think it is the perfect example of a themed family roller coaster that has just the perfect amount of thrills. It's long. It has elements that you're not expecting. It doesn't make you feel queasy. It's got a well-loved actor on it whose legacy will carry on in Robbie Coltrane. It's in, I have a lovely memory of Valentine's Day one before. I was in Orlando with Hannah and the queue was said like 150,000 minutes or something, but we were like, okay, we're here. We both had our butter beers. We were walking behind two people in their robes. So it felt like we were in this living, breathing world, and the queue was 10 minutes. They weren't even running the pre-show. It was a nighttime ride we got, and I got the front row. And it's just one of those amazing kind of... people love Velocicoaster at that part, but I much prefer Hagrid's, because as you get older, it's more of a... It's about everything coming together, not being chucked around as much. And I really think it's a triumph, that ride, because there's so many moving parts. You know, the switch track, the drop track, the backwards, the forwards, the lights flickering on the ride vehicle, and it's one of my favorite rides in the world. So I hope that answers your question.
It absolutely does. Perfect. And yeah, I rode it when I went to Orlando a couple of weeks ago, and I kind of avoided spoilers with it because I'm not a massive Harry Potter fan anyway, but I, you know, it's one of those rides I thought you've got to go and experience it. And
oh, you know, it's one of those, you know,
it's one of them. And I absolutely loved it. I mean, Velocicoaster did beat it for me, but I am a thrill coaster seeker, and Stardust Racers beat Velocicoaster for me, and loads of people don't agree with me on that. Yeah. But
does it smell, that park?
Epic.
Yeah, because I'm hearing reports, because it's built near a sewage centre, that it's starting to, in the heat, it's starting to emit some smells.
No, I didn't smell anything. And there is a lot of floral displays. So, you know, they're providing their own fresh nature.
Guess which way the wind blows, I suppose.
not something that I noticed. But yeah, definitely enjoy your trip there in September.
I will do.
I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time. And good luck with all your projects. And I look forward to hearing what you've been working on next when you release all that stuff. If you're not following him already, looking up on Instagram, Nick Hudson Music, you'll find him. And thank you for joining us on Parkcast today. It's been amazing.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
I'm going to be back here next week. If you haven't already, do hit that subscribe button and you'll get a notification when that episode gets released. And if you'd like to leave me a review, I'll be very grateful for it. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.